A life in a moment. Is that what you've always wanted to want? Well, here it is. Are you tied to it? Chained to it? No past. No future. Just one forever now.
This is Pirate Davy Jones. Recently, I had the opportunity to chat with someone I admire very much, the living legend, Mike Watt. Watt opens a conversation by telling me about his recent trip to Argentina with Iggy and the Stooges.
Big dream for us in the old days, when we found out you could tour, was to do a real American tour. Which is not the United States. America's a really north, central, south. So we went in a boat, in the van, play all the countries, go down the Pan-American Highway. And one day I'm going to do it. I mean, there's a war in Colombia right now and stuff, but things get calmer. I will do it. Not just flying to big towns, but in the boat like I do a U.S. and a Canada thing. Just go around. You know, cross the equator, so the seasons switch. Come up the other side into all the countries. That is my sueño grande, my big tour dream. The big one. I've done lots of tours, maybe 59 now. And that'll be the capper.
Oh, yeah.
So, but just getting to play there, even their big town, and flying in and out, is still, you know, it's a start. I got to meet Argentina people.
How were the Argentinians?
Got to play with them.
Yeah,
it was neat. You can tell they've had some hard thing with the money, and even probably a harder thing with that dictatorship they had years. But they have good spirit. I played summer, few countries coming out of stuff like that, like Slovakia and Hungary. Last summer, Serbia. And it's intense, you know, the resiliency of human spirit. I don't know. I think it's 13% of the U.S. people have passports, so everything they know is from TV and stuff. You actually, so my job has got good benefit where I get to actually meet people. And I think in a way, yeah, you're kind of a little ambassador too, because all they know of you is images. So when you actually meet people, I get told this all the time by people, oh, they hate us, you know. First of all, who's they? And, you know, everyone else.
This is in Tim's truck. He got for you some chips.
Oh, awesome. Much respect. All right, for Tim. Tim, you know, he puts the gigs down in Casbah.
Right on. Oh, Tim Mays. Yes. Tim Mays.
Right, Tim Mays. Good guy. So you have to actually meet people and stuff, and you find out that, I mean, I guess if you came strutting and swaggering and stuff, yeah, you might get a little attitude back. But if you're just people, they're interested. Well, you're one of them. Yeah, you're one of those.
They're surprised?
They're into it. Yeah, you're just people. You're no longer an image.
Yeah.
And they're no longer an image.
Yeah.
All this stuff, you know, people, they don't realize how they get spun by these image creators.
That's a question that I would have for you. I mean, you know, sometimes, you know, you see what's going on. I mean, obviously, there are various images that go on in, you know, the media, right, in print.
All kinds of stuff.
On the screen. There's all kinds of stuff happening right now.
No, but I mean all kinds of stuff. If you think about Minuteman, I mean, the name was actually Minuteman because we were at war with Arena Rock. You know, my first gig is 71 with T-Rex. So all we knew is there's no club. That 60s thing had gone. And so it was all in these big pads. So, oh, this is the way you do a band. So, of course, you're never going to get here. So you never imagine making a band. So punk turns that all around. Brings back the clubs, brings back individualism in bands, not appealing to lowest common denominator. So it's so easy to just say media. But it's actually in all kinds of facets of life. That there's only certain gatekeepers you can plead and appropriate a generic enough cookie cutter rubber stamp, you know, Xerox machine kind of thing to get through. And it's not true. You know, you look at your thumb and, whoa, I'm unique. on the other hand, there's enough common ground to not make you a total weirdo. Or a weirdo without, yeah, other weirdos to share some things. And that's what I mean. It does extend into this other arena, though, the media, I guess, and the image makers and stuff. But it's in something like rock and roll, which is supposedly, you know, sold on expression and rebelliousness. It's in that, too. So you can't just say, well, square Johns in their suits. I think it's part of a human tendency to get all herd-like. But there's other tendencies, too. That are like in conflict with that, like letting the freak flag fly.
Yeah. Well, I know there's this one time I just saw. I was talking about absurdities, you know, right before we started recording, and last year I saw this wild commercial. You know, I woke up to it. I went to sleep on my sofa and woke up to this commercial, and I actually saw Ronald McDonald doing a stage dive on television, and I pondered on it, and I think for about a month I actually started to get the feeling that punk rock may be dead.
Well, but I mean, there's always been this problem with rock and roll, so yeah, I would go to punk maybe too. If you think back a little bit, Little Richard, Tutti Frutti. Pat Boone sold more Tutti Frutti's than Little Richard. How? I mean, you listen to both versions. It's like, what? And that was 50 years ago. More, maybe. So it's been an old problem. So, of course, yeah. And especially now with the idea of marketing being at some kind of... Obviously, there's different ideas of marketing. You could think of marketing as a free speech thing, letting people know about something. But there's this kind of cynical bend on it, like, we're going to sell these people shit they don't want. In fact, we'll appropriate their imagery. Well, yeah, shove big knives down your throat because you want to stage dive the correct way. And, you know, like this. And people, you know, in the old days, they'd say, yeah, who'd get hip. They could see through this. It's not such a problem. But they're afraid of, get afraid of lynch mob. Yeah, oh, well, the people aren't hip or susceptible now. Which it might be true.
There's some truth to that.
Yeah, they get whooped up, a demagogue or something. So you have to be a crude, populist pose.
Right. Or at least be covert about
Obviously.
What it is that you believe, you know.
Well, that's considered good marketing, is being covert.
Yeah.
Instead, this other angle, like, hey, kind of free speech, you're just letting people know about a song or a service you might do.
Yeah.
No, it's this thing you're going to, like, trick them in. You're going to brainwash them. You're going to... It's like war. It's like bringing that kind of mentality. Mm. In fact, current trend is pretty much for romanticizing war.
Yeah.
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 Which is funny for me because I grew up Navy housing.
Yeah, I want to.
Enough of that. My pop was a sailor for 20 years. It's not a romantic notion. There's some things, though, I think, help me with the music. When he'd come home from his tours, he was in the Vietnam War. And that's why I came from Virginia. I came to Cali when I was 10. It was closer to Vietnam. But to him, coming home from his tours, and he'd take me driving for a couple days, hours at a time. And these, my mom would call them fish stories or sea stories. they were Torspiel. And I think this got me way, like, into that. Because you hear from a lot of musicians, hey, tour and all this. And me and D. Boom, right from the beginning, we thought it was, like, the best thing in the world. Yeah, because you got to physically go to these places and... Maybe us too, not really doing vacations, coming from Econo background. It just was the greatest thing.
Yeah.
And I still have it. I mean, I write diaries, if you go to the Hoot page, and I try to write about the tours. One thing I'm trying to do is I'll show people anybody can make a band. The other thing is, hey, maybe there's stuff out there worth checking out. Maybe you're a painter or a writer. and you're not a bass guitar player, but there's still a world out there. And even if you go back, it's changed.
Oh, yeah.
So you keep going back the same pad, and it's not the same. So I'm trying to make people curious. I love that disease.
Yeah, it is good.
I want to infect people with it. So it's not really... Same with this Minuteman documentary. I wasn't trying to say... I mean, I let those... Tim and Keith make that. You were too young to ever see us, you know. So I thought, well, the story of the documentary would probably be the story of them finding out about us. And it wasn't to say we were the best band. We were part of this movement. But I thought people saw us doing it. Anybody try it? Then I also wanted people to see D. Boom play. That's why I let Spike use the thing for Jackass. And
yeah,
people can hear him play.
She left, I feel like a gringo. They quit a song and they had some fun with us.
And the money went to his daddy. This way D. Boom could help his daddy.
Oh, so it helped his father out.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, it wasn't necessarily a selfish purpose, you know?
No.
Yeah.
No, it was, D. Boom wrote the song, all the money went to him, to his state.
Yeah. Wow.
And it was people, and then I'd love, you know, I only saw the pilot, he gave me the pilot, and it was like, whoa, these guys, they get put in a dumpster, shitter, portable shitter, dumped upside down. Like, okay. It's pretty funny, you know, like this kind of another level up above the skateboard thing or something. And it wasn't too shameful. It was a lot about individualism. Yeah, maybe it's a little goofy in this stuff, but it's still about individualism. And I thought, even though the song is trippy about a lady, you can go to feed her kids on some empty beer bottles that some northern neighbors were partying on. It's like D. Boom was trying to say in the song, we're all connected.
Yeah.
It's weird. We did it. Went down to Mexico after cutting our heads bald the first time, you know, just for some gig. And in the water all day. So, of course, sunburn really bad, you know, and that was very sensitive. We'd never done that. So we were Pelon Rojos. And he wrote that one. And I wrote one, I Felt Like a Gringo, the other day, because it happened to be the 4th of July, but also their election day. And like I said, this self-centered thing, you don't know other lands. So you go, all of a sudden the situation put me in another land. I'm seeing the voting. And it's interesting, the trucks came in with these boy soldiers,
uh-huh.
And they're passing out the bread. And I'm signing. But it was interesting. I really think we're put on the dealio to learn. Not to have it all figured out. In fact, middle age. This is my 20s, I knew everything.
Yeah.
Although that was humbling.
Didn't we all?
And that happened in my 20s. That really humbled me. I didn't know. And it was like, wow. You know, yeah, they didn't have a commercial for that. Yeah, Ronald Donald didn't explain this to me. And I actually had to be there. And they were my teachers. It's all right. It's great. And D. Boone, too, with that lady, seeing her pick up the bottles and stuff. And so we both came out with different songs from the same experience. But what were we trying to do with the Minutemen? Because we never had written songs before, Bob. I mean, there was no culture for that.
Right.
You know, the best guy was the guy who played Black Dog in there. So what we thought, and what was interesting about meeting these punk rockers at those first gigs, so... It was like, wow, if you talk to these guys, maybe that's kind of what the songs are about. So we didn't know what lyrics were for. I mean, the Dylan ones were kind of like your weird uncle shows up Thanksgiving and is muttering. But, like, words were like lead guitar something. You know, what was Smoke on the Water? You know, any of that stuff was American Woman, you know? Any of this. Blue Oyster Cult, you know, T-Rex, Telegram Sam, you know? Transmaniac condoms. We didn't... Just didn't relate to what words were about. And the punkers showed us, well, maybe they can be about you or what's on your mind. So that's what we ended up writing kind of songs about.
But obviously, you know, a lot of thought went into that, right? I mean, you're talking about your experiences, you know, past and during that time when you were a young man.
Yeah. And this idea of expression.
Right.
Being okay and not having to be really
in the herd
prescribed
mentality.
Forms. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, and the herd mentality, exactly.
That's right.
That's what struck us about these people at the gigs. Man, these are some personas here. Because it was in the 70s still, and a little small thing in Hollywood. And it really was unpredictable for us. We didn't know what it was. It hadn't got homogenous enough. Somebody told me Hot Topic, like there's mall stores where you can dress.
Yeah.
In those days, people were actually making their own outfit. I know it still happens, too. It still happens. And in fact, I try to play some Cali Warp gigs every year. I didn't this year, but last year I did. Yeah, I did it here. I was in San Diego last year, and it was like the Coors something parking lot.
Yeah, my Hot Topic was a thrift store, you know.
You made it up, right?
I was wearing anyway, right?
Right. And see, and it's kind of tragic, or even more laughable. But young persons, and you know how young people are when you read Lord of the Flies and peer pressure.
Sure.
No one wants to be Piggy. But you know about life. You got to play Piggy at least sometime. Few choice performances. Yeah, it's very bizarre about the whole deal. Even the word. I remember when we first heard, oh, punk. That in our town, that was the guy who got fucked in jail for sure.
Yeah, right. And then,
they got a music like this.
Homosexual
fucking.
Right.
You know, but then we saw it and it was like, whoa, this is just like anything goes. In fact, the first thing I said to D Boone was, we can do this. And without even thinking, it just came out of my mouth. Not how. Do we have to do what they're just, we can do. We can. Can do. You know? Empowerment. I don't know what she was looking for. Some empowerment.
Yeah.
That's what we felt from being arena rock captives to all of a sudden now we can, instead of some shrine, everybody goes to temple too, you know? No, this is a hammer. We can use it. And ring a bell or something. Things on our mind. Especially in those, you're talking about those days. You're very inquisitive. You've been fed many years of socialization in the schools.
Oh, yeah.
And then, but you're coming together and sizing up stuff. So you have a lot on your mind. Those are heavy times. And so why not be expressive?
That's right.
So that's culture. And sometimes that I come from, and sometimes even when I doubt, you know, because I get afraid.
Oh,
but
yeah.
The momentum of those days, they'll push me through that stuff. It's weird. It was such a strong experience on them.
So would you say that pushes you through today? I mean, the momentum of those days, I mean, is that still kicking in for you?
Yeah.
I mean, it's maybe 20-plus years.
Yeah, and I think it was important, too. It wasn't like a style of music. It was more of like
a mindset.
An idea, yeah. Mindset.
Yeah.
Because then it could grow with you. You know, and so fashion, I think, means face. You know, faces get tired. That's why I love Halloween. It's the only day of the year we admit we wear costumes. So play 24 in a row now.
Would you say that you also grew with it? I mean, now that you hear music today, right? I mean, can you honestly say that if you turn on the FM stereo right now, that there's something you can listen to and it would blow you away, just like, you know, wow.
You know, up in L.A., I got the Sex Pistols guitar player on the radio a couple hours.
Oh, yeah.
And he plays stuff from my days. He plays like 70s music, Faces, Bebop Deluxe, because we're probably around the same age. But I like hearing him talk. He's not like a rock jock, but he's probably the only thing on the FM radio. I got one of these. And it's all full Coltrane. I got 300 John Coltrane songs on.
Coltrane, okay. So
I'm doing the 14-hour flight from Buenos Aires. That's what keeps me sane. I have these plugs. You know, John Coltrane. Yeah, well, the whole idea of jazz, you know. Me and D. Boone didn't grow, but we didn't know it. It was punk.
Oh, yeah.
Raymond Pettibone. Maybe Coltrane.
Certainly, bending the notes. That was
We actually thought they were playing punk.
Bending convention.
We thought they were older. I didn't know he was dead. I didn't know anything about it. I just knew it totally part of this freaky scene. These dudes were listening. There was a lot of artist people, a lot of glam and glitter people. And that music always interested me because it was weird. Like that, my first gig's T-Rex. But we really like Creedence too. In fact, I didn't know, you know, I grew up Navy housing, so I didn't know them shirts were farmer shirts. I just thought, whoa, I like his kind of rock and roll shirt. I didn't know. And that's why I wear them still.
You know, they are great.
I do know now. Awesome. But I just dug him. I thought, whoa, because he was different. I didn't see anybody really wearing them. So it's a weird thing because the music was very, you talk about music. Wasn't really a musician. It was a very personal thing. This is something I did to be with D. Boone, you know? His mama put me on bass. I didn't really know how to bass in arena rock. You're so far away. You can see in the pictures it looked like a guitar. I didn't know the strings were bigger. Strange thing. You're going to play the bass. And we were 13. That's how we hung out. So our thing is very personal. And then we see the scene where they let anybody go up and play. So, like, the musician thing really was not there a lot. Or it was there, like, you know how to write, or you know how to talk. You know, it's just some way of doing it. Maybe the idea should be important. Maybe, you know, maybe you forgot some commas or whatever, you know, but you can still have a happening story. So that's why we kind of played down. We also felt a little polluted, because a lot of these punk rockers, you could tell, did not know how to play. They were just going. They were not in the room ahead of time copying records. Those guys were gravitated to other scenes. Probably, you know, whatever, cover bands and they to play. And we never even knew about that. So I mean, we just did it just to hang out. But we did have kind of a leg up on them as far as some time working the machine. Okay. Believe me, we stumbled through it. Fuck, we thought to be in tune, you just play down on the corner. We didn't know your down on the corner had to be your buddy's down on the corner. We thought the soul tightness of the string thing was a feel. I like mine tight. I like. We didn't relate to pitch so much.
Broke lots of strings.
The R just must have sounded god awful. Luckily, I have no tapes of those days. So, the whole dealio. But you know what? That turned out the punk scene was a lot about person and personality. Because obviously, there wasn't a lot of virtuosity yet. These guys were just learning. They had nerve like crazy to be that brave. Really inspires. They can do it. Shit, we're going to do it.
And you did.
Yeah. But that's why I try to say we're part of a movement. And it wasn't so hierarchical. Quite autonomous, really. Like there was no any. You had all kinds of people. You see. But it was a movement. I know it. I know if there wasn't any punk, I don't. Seriously doubt I'd be doing this music thing for a living. So I owe it to that scene, you know. But then on the other hand, I do want to make a demand on the scene. Especially, I love that slogan, anarchy. You guys got to make it real, man. Not one band playing one song. Come on. So you know, crazy.
If you didn't play music, and obviously you have love for the music you make, what would you like to do other than that?
I like the arts. Maybe write.
Yeah.
That's a personal reason I do the diaries. I'm trying to practice to learn how to write. Probably still weak on the syntax, and I'm not so concerned with that, but just the idea of pulling things out, you know, that can resonate some chords.
And it resonates chords, would you say, because there is that commonality out there.
Absolutely.
We are related. We see that, I'm like, oh shit, I can relate to this.
Every book I read, and I read tons, you know. All of a sudden, it could be Dante 800 years ago, and all of a sudden the dude's writing my life.
Yeah.
In fact, more than my life in that moment. Why? Because that's a magical literature. There's something about the written word that's so personal that you can relate all kinds of shit of your whole life right in it. You can kind of do this with songs too, but like the written word, big time. Big time. All of a sudden, you are in the story. This dude's writing your whole thing. One time I was doing Confederacy of Dunces, I ended up in New Orleans. I go to St. Charles, address in St. Charles, find Ignatius. You know, it was just a coincidence of life put me right there. And then, it's a trip. But the books are heavy on me like that.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, I'm convinced the guy knows my life. In fact, he's prophetic and he knows what's going to happen and where I've been and all this. First, I first started realizing this when I was a teenager and I read Huck Finn. Jim on the Raft. And Jim on the Raft. Andy Boone on tour. All the phonies, all the shills, all the cons, all the hustles. It was a trip.
I have a question.
People talking slang. It was weird. Yeah.
Oh, no, that's okay. I'm just digging in what you were saying. I love that. One of the things, and one of these questions I like to ask of a person is that obviously musicians, you know, and certainly you've been playing over a couple decades plus. We feel that you guys make a statement and, you know, hopefully people listen to it, right? Or, you know, or at least it gets them thinking, right? Gets their mind, just like literature, right? They read it, gives them something to think about, right? Is there anything in your life right now, or anything that would keep you up at night, that would just, you know, you see things going on today? Is there anything that would wake you up in the middle of the night and keep you awake?
Yeah, there's scary things. Technology makes weapons real powerful.
Ah, yeah.
Makes whims have intense consequences. But I do feel a lot of my connections with the arts. Sometimes I think it is the basic fabric, especially when the material lets us down and it goes through the cycles of that. There's something about the arts. And yeah, I was like Faulkner, Light in August, that book. I couldn't stop reading it. I read it in 2 days, 500 pages. I was in France. In fact, we were staying in the Hotel Proust spent like 7 years in. Colmar. So I was in my Normandy coast. You know, I was a fiction man. Boone was really into history, so he got me into history. So here I, you know, I rented a bike. So I pedal 4 days a week, and I got a kayak in it. Man, 3 days a week I pedal. That's something middle age came along. I didn't ride a bike for 22 years. Anyway, I rented a bike, and I went right where fucking William the Conqueror put together his boats. I mean, of course, I'm thinking of D. Boone, you know. D. Boone is where they built the boats, and D. Boone would be totally into that. And the next day was June 6th, so we got to, it was D-Day. So Ronnie, of course, you know, oh, we got to go check out the Normandy beaches. See how trippy fate puts you in places? But you got to be aware. You got to have all the, you know, sensory devices open. That's why I get kind of bummed out on certain, yeah, whatever, hustles that dumb people's sensors down. Get them numb. Because there's a lot out there, man. Somebody once told me the only thing new is you finding out about it. It's good. But Light in August, I could not put it down. That thing gripped me. Joe Christmas, oh my God. Lena, Byron, Reverend Hightower. The way Faulkner did it. It was like Joyce, but not a foreigner. U.S. guy, you know?
Yeah, American, right?
Yeah, and the language, it wasn't exotic. It was exotic in the idea and the way it was surreal big time. But it was plain spoken. It was a trip. I was caught up in it. I got fucking caught up in it. You know? It just spoke to me. It made me where I was in my life then. I've gotten back too. I'm almost 50. And I've been going back because I read a lot when I was younger. And when you go and read things that you read before, it ain't the same. It's not like, well, now it's done. Like we were talking about going to places and thinking you all already saw it. No, you go back and change. Well, you change. Obviously, the words in the book stay the same, but you change. So after that sickness almost killed me, I read Divine Comedy again. It was way different. And then the 100th anniversary of Bloomsday was coming up, so I read Ulysses again. Way different. In fact, both books ended up being a lot sadder than when I read them as a younger man. Also, I wasn't caught up so much in how to get
hang on to the structure. What are the, you know, what's, how's this built? I could almost see through the lines and hear the guy's voice. I mean, maybe this is crazy.
No, that's real reading. That's right. Yeah.
And maybe it takes a skill to develop. You have to read a lot of guys, and you have to get a lot of books under your belt to develop that, where it's no longer just stuffing words and equating meanings. You actually hear a voice.
Right.
And I just reread On the Road, the Kerouac. All these young man books, you know, I'm going to go do the Nietzsche again, you know. All this young stuff. That's just important for a young man, these bold things. Or young woman, a young person to read these bold things.
Gotcha.
But you know what? Maybe it's kind of cool to go back and read them again, too. Because you change, but that writing's still there. I'm not like you're all cynical and folly, you know, and be a big judge on them. No, it's just as vital. But you're different. And these things, when dudes make good arts, they're holding up mirrors. Somehow. They ain't trying to, and it's not didactic. But you get to check out yourself. They help you. It's one of the ways us humans share and helping each other is through arts. It's not really just to say I can paint better than you, write better than you. It's not just an elite thing. Actually, in its most noble sense, it helps you. Of course, you got to let it help you. And you got to be a little choosy. Yeah, maybe the Ronald McDonald stage diving commercials just don't get it. Think some, all the people that worked on that probably went to school, got degrees, all this training, all this technique, and look what was at the core. Actually, he's to sell you a fucking puck. And to laugh, and also to laugh at this. Oh, you rebellion people. You know. Don't you think so? We'll co-opt your thing. Hey, if communism's hip, we'll fucking sell you that too. What do you need?
Yeah, everything turning into a commodity these days, mm-hmm. right?
And then there's a certain freedom in that. But that doesn't mean you can't be master your own head. Critical. Or, you know, take a consensus of other opinions along with it. You know, the guy's got the control in his hand. There's nothing on TV. He won't let go of the controller, right? He just says, there's nothing on. Turn it off or start your own show. Actually, it's a great medium.
Sure.
You can imagine when it first came out the potential that creative people were thinking of. And of course it got reduced down to this. Because there's these things of humanity, you know, that we're always going to be faced with these kind of things.
Right.
So in a lot of ways I was lucky.
Yeah.
You know, meet Dee Boone, meet a scene with, meet Raymond Pettibone, Jesus Christ. Raymond Pettibone, the most brilliant person. You can't pull the wool over that guy with anything. But he's very shy, very soft-spoken. He's an interesting man. He's taught me a lot about dig. It's at the root of this thing. You can still have fun. We go to the racetrack and see the ponies. We don't bet $2 a race. But the jocks, we think, are so brave. The little guys on these huge, beautiful animals. And it is kind of bizarre. They're just running around. And you can tell people are not enjoying themselves watching. They got all this money riding on it. But
right,
we got nothing riding on it, so it's fun.
That's probably a show in itself to see these.
It's kind of sad.
Oh, is it?
Heavy. Yeah, because you can tell it is a very stressful thing for them. Not for us. You know, I like certain jocks. I go with jocks on, but Raymond in his mind, of course, he knows all the trainers, all the owners, you know, the stats and the form, and so it's interesting just to hear his mind work. And so that's one of the reasons I go to things like that with him. I went to jazz shows, and I really believe we're here to learn, and there's certain people that you're blessed with luck to be a sensei, you know, a teacher. And maybe I show him some things too, accidentally, somehow. But, you know, I mean, incredible, Raymond, in my life, person in my life. Dee Boone, you know, these guys. So I can't say it's a total Watt thing. And still people, like nowadays, Iggy, incredible teacher. My God, brilliant man. I listen to everything he says. He's a very interesting guy. Thurston, think he's playing
Sonic
tonight.
Youth, yeah, he's playing tonight down the street.
He's helped me out many times in my life, especially right after D-Bone died. Got me playing. I didn't think people wanted to hear me play without D-Bone. I mean, he had me come in on do this Evo album, and
right.
And we so I want me to do this Chicone U. Yeah, maybe want to play with me.
But would you?
It's a hard time for me. I never figured that happening. So D-Bone seems so strong. He was strong. But you know, there's this Pete Townsend album. Who came first, right? And he's got that combat boots on. He's standing on eggs. Yeah. I mean, that's the reality. We all convinced of the firmness, but it's really just a fragile thing.
Who do you think that, who had that the greatest influence on you?
Oh, obviously D-Bone. Obviously.
Yeah.
Because that put me in the situation where these other people came to me. Or I came to them or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Just the arts thing. Remember, I'm from working. My town's mainly longshoremen.
Yeah.
In the older days, more fishermen. My pop was a sailor. And I didn't know that many artistic people. People who could paint, he actually was. Although his daddy, you know, put in radios at Buick lot. Nobody picks at their situation, you know, that they come out of. It's not where you're from, it's where you're at. Yeah. It's where you, what you do with what's dealt at hand. But so these situations came in where, whoa, there's some creativity here. I'm interested in that. My father, yeah, he told me not to join the Navy. I never had dreams of being in the Navy. But this idea of seeing places by going somewhere, the van is the boat. I started sending
that's
him.
That's why you're calling it the boat.
Yeah, I started sending him postcards. He had no music people in his family. He didn't do this shit. He just thought it was something I did with D-Boone as a boy. And he was right. So, but he didn't realize, why are you still doing it with him killed, you know? Hey, Papa, make a living. This is what I do. And so I started sending postcards from tour. And he's like, whoa. It dawned on him. I mean, this is many years of doing it. He retired from the Navy to Fresno, where there's no ocean that time. But he's like, wow, you're like a sailor. And that's where it put in my mind, you know what, for all the differences, a lot of common ground. My life paralleled my pops in a lot of ways. Ain't that weird?
Yeah. So you could say at times then children really do turn into their parents in some way.
Yeah.
In some strange
form. In certain ways, yeah.
Yeah.
And so that's why I wrote that Contemplating the Engine Room opera.
Yeah.
About the three guys in the boat. That's using my father's life as an analogy for our band. I had never written for D-Bone. It took me 14 years to get the nerve up to say, you know, I want to write about it. It hurts so hard. So then I just lost my pop a few years before I wrote that. And gave me his Blue Jacket Manual. That's a book they give you when you join it. I don't have romantic military notions, you know, but just this idea of, you know, life took them down a certain path, and that's what happened with us. We had a lot more choice in our matter. Like when I told you he told me not to join the Navy. He'll tell you when to shit, when to breathe, when to eat. You tell me the day of the week, I don't care where I am in the world, I know where you're eating. You know, all these real petty things, but you know. And the boots on you, you know? And so the autonomy of being in a band with your buddy, yeah, just a little bit different. So I won't say exactly like the Navy, punk Navy. But that's weird about similarities. Oh, and also, one of the jobs of all kids, which at some point in their life, is forgive their parents. Because you can look back and see the fuck-ups they did. But, you know, maybe they're trying to do the best job they could with what they had. So you got to kind of have to say that. Or you never get beyond. You'll just be in a blame game with them. And that's hard to do with some parents because some are really motherfuckers.
Yeah.
But we got to get down the road. So you do have to end up taking things into hands. Look at me, I never had kids. I'm so afraid. My mother would curse us. My sisters didn't either. I have two sisters. But she'd always curse us. Well, my mama's Italian. So the emotion did. Her people can't remember. Besides beating you with a Hot Wheels track. You're going to have 10 just like you. You know, the curse. No, another thing was, too, because I hardly saw my pop because it was at sea. Yeah. Right. But look at us. I play music for young people. My sisters are both teachers. We're involved with young people.
Right on.
Just not our own. We're not the bio, the breeders. We're the apparatchiks. there's a strange thing about it. It makes a little more sense. I mean, it's important, and your parents are counting on, especially in your 20s, maybe late teen years, you have to become your own person. It's a tough thing. Okay, they don't like clones. They might kind of, but not really.
No. I don't think they want you to, us to go through the same things they did.
Right.
Certainly my parents don't.
Yeah, mine do. They want you to get down the road a little bit. And it's hard because they're afraid for you. Because they know the thing in the world's all the heaviness. And you discuss arts to them, and you know, it's the most scary, dangerous thing, right? So I got a degree from my father in electronics, and I never used it. He just didn't know what it was, you know? It's just something you do with your friend, you know? Yeah, you're right.
Well, obviously.
So I'm trying to pass this on to kids. So they don't think it's just something that Ronald McDonald can put on. It's actually something that's been here. I remember Raymond teaching me about Dada that happened during the First War.
Right.
And a lot of similarities with our scenes.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of iconoclastic. And the people before and the futurists, even. And all of them, there's a big tradition. It's almost a link and chain. Like, you know, only thing new is you finding out. You have to kind of do it for yourself to make it real. But on the other hand, there's traditions of this. Tradition of non-tradition. So I'm trying to pass this on to people so they don't get confused because everything, I mean, you know, we were so mad at the Viet Cong for not wearing uniforms. You know, all of a sudden there's no uniform. You know, the black pajamas, you know, they're not playing fair. They should have uniforms. You know, the North Vietnamese do it. Like in the Viet Cong, where, well, that's the way it is, you know. Sometimes life ain't just about uniforms.
Yeah.
And so that's just what I'm trying to show them. And my mother, a couple years ago, put color in my hair. You know, you're playing for young people. You should have. But you know what? And I felt like it was a fucking hat.
Was it Grecian formula?
Or some shit like that. Yeah, boss ass if I love sweat. But then I was thinking, fuck, kids should see me playing with gray hair.
Yeah.
You know, they should see this. Why not? It's like the scary thing. But look at them too, how open-minded they are. They'll check out music that's 20, 30 years old. That never happened in my day. You wouldn't listen to a band 5 years old. Kids are more open-minded now. They see somebody from the old days. Not just validating older music, but maybe, whoa, what am I going to do when I'm his age?
Yeah.
Do I burn out? You know, do I cash in? What do? I outgrow it?
Yeah.
So I think it's, I'm trying to hand down things, not really beat down on them like a cop, but make art of it. Make some kind of work out of it. That's kind of trippy to make them curious. And open-ended enough that they can figure out their own meaning for it. Yeah, maybe this fucker is Peter Pan, or wannabe Peter Pan. What's going on in their fucking mind? But, when John Coltrane died at 40, and I found out where his grave was, it's middle of Long Island. I took the train out from Penn Station, you know, I was in New York City, and when I turned 40.
You checked it out.
And I laid on his grave. Which maybe was not too polite, but no one was there. It was in the Garden Sanctuary at Pine Lawn. The train station's right there, the graveyard's right at the train. It's an outside one, and there's nothing. You walk out there.
Did you feel it would do something for you if you did that?
I mean, I sometimes I've made
I wanted to do that, but I'm not a graveyard guy. I've never been to D. Boone's grave. I didn't go to my pop's funeral. I didn't go to D. Boone's funeral. I'm really against it.
Shit.
But there was something about that, about 40, because it seemed like John Coltrane had like 10 million more songs. And I know D. Boone did too. But John Coltrane is, something about his eyes. Yeah. Something about his eyes. And I just wanted to be there with him. Like with D. Boone, like, because when D. Boone's alive, I talk to him a lot and ask him things. And I still do, but I don't get answers. So I tried it out on John Coltrane. And, yeah, I didn't get any answers. I asked him, were you thinking of the hit single when you made a record? I leaned there and I said that. It's probably insane.
But he didn't answer me. We've all done things like that because we think we might be able to pull something out, you know, and hope.
Yeah, it was just something about it.
Connection, you know, that's
his music, man. It was trippy. It was like he's trying to get beyond her. Like I saw this thing Rashid Ali talking about him, saying, "Oh yeah, practice." And you'd be thinking, "Why practice more? You're already good enough."
Already perfect.
But I probably know what happened. By practicing that thing over and over. Okay, I got it done. Now this leads to another possibility. Now we got to chase that one. Now it was unending. Because that's the way his mind worked. It was in the realm of possibility. I mean, this is my own guess at it. He took 10, 12 hours a day. The guy was obsessed. There's something about him. And D. Boone, in the morning, my bike ride, I go past the place where we started the Minuteman. I'm into this physicalness of actually going by paths. There's something about it.
Yeah.
Because I live in a lot of imagination, too. I know art's for transcending. John Fogerty was not born on the bayou. Still a good song. I can imagine the first cave painting, you know? The guy says to his buddy, what do you think it is? And what the guy say, oh, that's chromium zinc oxide. I think of this when people say, keep it real. No, it's a buffalo, can't you see? But actually, the guy's right, right? You got that. Can't you see it? So the art is to transcend, you know, and to get on. But there's something about a physicalness, too. Maybe it's part of my own myth-making.
Yeah, absolutely.
I just think, and even history I've noticed is getting changed. Instead of the one Michener type of author, de facto surveying the domain of knowledge, or his knowledge, and letting us in and peek.
Yeah,
it's more little personal narratives. When you read that Please Kill Me thing about the punk in New York in the 70s, and they're little stories of the people who were there. So even in history, not even myth, non-fiction world, maybe it's moving to this more personal experience. And, I just know it was very important for us Minuteman.
I have a question for you. You were somebody, at one time, a band dedicated an album to you. That was the Red Hot Chili Peppers. Any thoughts on that?
I'm on tour with them in November, December with my Missing Man.
Oh, really?
Ah. In Europe. Flea asked me to.
Yeah.
I think their second gig was opening for the Minuteman. So I go way back with them guys, and I've opened for them on a tour before, and good cats. We share a lot of history. Our first big tour of U.S. and Europe was with Black Flag, all of us in the same boat, you know, band. And so I have a tradition of this, of music being a personal kind of trip. And so, something like that. I remember I was overseas when I saw that. Somebody showed it to me in a German record store. Hey, what do you think of this? I was touring with Firehose.
Oh, yes. I remember this, the Brave Captain video coming out on television.
Yeah. French TV did that for free. I saw that and I just thought, man, that's righteous of these guys. Very generous of them. You know? There's a lot of nice cats in this racket. It's not all hustlers. So that it was a person connection, people connection. I don't think they were trying to say Mike Watt's better than other people.
Oh, no.
It was just
yeah,
very, very generous of them. I wrote a song called History Lesson Part 2, where I was trying to explain the hardcore, the people from the original scene had kind of stopped going to gigs, and the new shift was younger people from the suburbs and hardcore. And, you know, in a way, even though now you look back, you're only 4 or 5 years older, but in those days that meant a lot. But we're not just Martians from Planet Jazz, you know. In a way, we're just like you. We play different, but that was the idea. You know, punk is weird. You know, so I wrote this song to show them, and I used a lick kind of from Velvet Underground, If She Ever Comes Now. And I put Richard Hell in it, I put John Dolan in, and Joe Strummer. And I put these other people in the song, and of course, I put D. Boone in it. But I couldn't sing it and play it at the same time, so I asked D. Boone to do it. So I put my name in it, because he didn't want to say D. Boone. Which made sense. Good call, D. Boone. But that maybe that's like what the Chili Peppers were doing. You know, you call out people. Oh, I say that. Real names will be proof. Or something. Which is... I think I say that in the song. Real names will be proof. Like, I want you to understand this. I'm not just being... saying this to avoid a tricky thing. Like, why are you playing weird? Yeah, there's a reason why we're playing weird. We're weird. And this is a weird scene, kids. It's okay. Bring it on. Bring it on. That's why I was trying to tell him. And we haven't made it soft, okay? But to us, it was a very punk song for me, for them. And for them, generous, not talking down to them, saying I'm with you on this. It's just confusing because we're used to a genre and this marketing, putting things in a type of marketing that puts things in categories for easy labeling, easy target demographic. And this movement is against that.
Oh, yeah.
And if the Berlin Wall was only a physical thing, yeah, just a few hammer blows. But it's up here.
Oh, yeah.
And we're not better than you.
That's right.
But we'll play. We love. In fact, we love playing for you. But there's already 100 bands doing that song. That song you guys are listening to. So let's try another one out on you. You know. And so it's okay. We're not better than you. We're not looking down on you. You got a kink in your neck. I notice. If you look up at people and you look down at people, you know, you just give it right across. It's a lot healthier than that. So that's what I was kind of talking about. There was another song I wrote for them called, in fact, TSOL. And Jack, I became. Really like Jack, the singer, sweet guy. Does construction now and stuff, but still does the band when he can.
Yeah,
and I wrote
years.
Yeah, I wrote a song called Fake Contest. Because people wanted to use this as like, oh, these, you know, this. Of course, they got on the bad end too when they tried to go out a little bit. This represents what it is, and these guys are fucking with the Orthodox.
Uh huh.
And of course, they got it too. And who is they that is making up these minds? It says it was bizarre, you know. So I said it was a fake contest, man. These guys were sharing the stage, we're sharing the pit. That's just how it should be in the. The perfect punk world, you know, but it's a hard deal because we're dealing with humans, and you can say things, but to live them is really tough. It means always having to be inventive and creative, and all this, you know, all these this burden. A burden to me that should be never solved.
Do you still see orthodoxy in the music scene?
Of course.
But certainly you see your share of unorthodoxy.
But then that's right. And any farmer would tell you, if you want a good crop, use a lot of manure. Now bring it on, motherfuckers. Yeah, isn't it weird about nature? She hates inbreeding. There's a lot of things that the human species can learn from with her. The acorn never falls from the tree. What a load of shit is that? The tree is laying that acorn so a squirrel eats it and shits it out very far away. Yeah, because they don't like inbreeding.
That's right.
Yeah. So, isn't that trippy?
Yeah.
And there's all kinds of interrelationships with the insects and things. And I started reading about this stuff. It was bizarre. About an ant that breeds its own fungus. It farms its own fungus. And it uses honey that's come out of a caterpillar's head. And the caterpillar tracks him up beat. on his head with his antennas are going to fall off when he turns into a butterfly. They're fake ones. So it's only a phase in his life. But it so happens that the ants talk to each other by tapping on the ground, so they get faked by this song. But it ends up being very good because, and it ends up maybe helping us because this fungus they grow, they've been doing it for millions of years. So it's not resistant to the superbugs. So isn't it weird, the interactions? So for the sake of orthodoxy, to keep us pure, the ethnic cleansing, it's insane. It's just weird ideas.
Very recently, one of the other pirates did an interview and spoke to a band, Treasure Mammal. In fact, Abe from the band had claimed that he wanted us to tell you this, that he believed that you're an American punk icon. He just wanted to say mucha thanks for all the music you've done.
Sweet.
Yeah.
But I'm part of a movement. I'm product of a movement. So I don't want to stick out like too special.
Yeah.
You know? But it is an interesting movement. You can make it still interesting. And that would make me happier than being called more special than somebody else.
Right.
You know?
Right.
For the team!
For the team.
For the right. team. But not like lynch mob. Not like let's everybody put on hoods. You know, and hide. And you know, get piggy.
Right.
When I say team, I mean it in the most creative syndicalist, anarcho-syndicalist sense.
It was great talking to you.
Oh, thanks, Dave.
Commonly, we asked anybody we interviewed to make your best pirate arg. Are you able to do that
arg.
Fast?
Oh, I'm way into that. You know, because San Pedro High, right? I'm class 76, me, Debo, and Georgie. And, we didn't mention Georgie. Beautiful person who came into my life, too. God has been there for me so many times. But our team is the Pirates. San Pedro High Pirates, black and gold. And so, in fact, that's where they snuck in the booze during Prohibition. Whiskey Flats, they called a part of Pedro. So I think that we have an old pirate tradition there in Pedro. Where we call our beach Cabrillo, by the way, not Cabrillo like around here. Although I know Juan Cabrillo came in and discovered that many thousands of Indians were living there. When they say, I like the discovered part, you know, they want to say discovered. San Pedro or California.
It was already found, right?
Yeah, you've discovered thousands of people living there. And decided the religion wasn't good enough. So there was a lot of consequence to that. But our big plumber dresses up as him every year and marches out of the water to discover that thousands of people were living. They don't cop to that yet. They will. What? Well, organize some kind of thing like that.
Please do.
But yeah, the pirate thing is way in the tradition. I think it was in the punk thing too. The idea of no middleman. You got to get your hands on it.
Right.
Almost like skateboard. You fall down, you know, you can't talk your way out of it. You got to get back up. Arr! Arr! On me ass again. I got to prop myself back up. You know.
There you have it. It's our pirate podcast with Mike Watt, an American musical legend. American punk icon, the greatest, and a true pirate, as we've heard.
Legendary.